Do you actually think that if you were born in Scotland or Ireland, would you have a preference towards Scotch or Irish whiskey? Or is it just because you're in the States?
I think
I have a preference for that.
I think you would, but it'd be more like that, like, oh, it's the hometown thing. It'd be the go-to, but you'd probably celebrate with bourbon, wouldn't you? Or something that isn't.
Yeah, I mean, that actually is a really good point. Like, because if you live there, like, do people there like Scotch better? And do they like Irish whiskey better than bourbon? Because I know plenty of people in the States prefer Irish and Scotch over bourbon. And that's not close.
Yeah, no.
There's plenty.
That's true.
So.
That's the thing. I think it's that exposure versus, I think there's also, you get to this part of the world and people don't necessarily drink as much liquor in general.
Why not? Did you know that over $5 trillion exchanges hands on a daily basis? That's an average of over $220 billion an hour. Now, how does this much money move every single day, and why does it move the way it does? Here on Drunkenomics, two bartenders who also happen to be students at the University of Nebraska Graduate School of Business are going to sit down and drink to the global economy and try and translate it into English. So sit back, relax, pour yourself a stiff one, and have a drink with us to the comedy that is the global economy.
All right, guys, and welcome back to Drunkenomics, the drinking podcast with an economics problem in true fine form and with an edit in the Discord to match. I greet you for the second week running as James Goldwater, less gracious host, live from the Midwest, and of course from the sunny Southwest.
Very
more
sunny.
Gracious. And 2 weeks running,
yeah.
The man with the plan.
Well, I don't know. What do you want to call it? I don't know. On this ring.
I'll call you Mr. Aaron Wong. Yeah, it was a good plan.
Yeah. No, as a matter of fact, most of them are not. But we do have the running bet. So what's the bet on who's going to be more gracious out of the Super Bowl? I had the Chiefs, right? And you had the Eagles?
I'll take the Pigeons.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Like the Chefs and the Pigeons. So if the Chefs win the Super Bowl, I get to be...
Pigeon salad.
I get to be more gracious next week. And if your little birds, if your little doves win, then you get to be more gracious next week. Isn't that exciting?
Look, if I could be LGH 3 weeks running, things will be better.
I don't know about that.
It'll make more sense.
I really liked
to
it
me.
When you were more gracious, to be honest with you. I don't know how comfortable I'm sitting in this position.
Well, it's more fun to be less gracious. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I guess let's start here. Let's kind of put this at the beginning. Anything we say, I know we talk a lot about economics and things like that. So just for the record, none of this is financial advice. The things that we say and that we mention in this podcast in terms of economic worldviews and market views and things like that don't reflect the views of our employers, and if they do, it is 100% coincidental. You know, it's my views solely. They don't reflect the views of anybody else or any other entity other than myself.
Like I said, unless it's a coincidence, and even then it's not a disclosed one, they're not telling us what to
exactly.
say.
So if I think James is weird for drinking the white rum and Cokes, yeah, that's just my view. Like that's
you're
not,
right.
That's not my. That's not James's view. That's not my employer's view.
No, it is my view.
Oh, okay,
it's my view
cool.
too. It's just
well,
means
you
to
see
an
what
end.
I mean, though. But that's completely coincidental, right?
Exactly.
So yeah,
exactly
it's just,
right.
It's completely because I had no idea it was your view, and the fact that it was your view had no impact on my view.
I was gonna say if I'd known we were gonna get a verdict in the Elon Musk. Securities fraud case, I really would have said we should have taken a bet on that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that we were going to get one this soon.
I'll say this. Like O.J. Simpson, he didn't do it.
What a comparison.
Look,
is there going to be a civil suit later?
This was the civil suit.
Oh, wait. Really? Did someone short Tesla and then all of a sudden Elon Musk tweeted that and they go, hey, material loss because I shorted 30 million shares?
No, it was shareholders who showed real loss after he did that, and after he made that announcement, and then it turned out not to be true.
Oh, so they bought at 400,
or they were there for a very volatile time, and they're like, "Hey, it's our belief that had you not done that, we would have been on a less rocky road, a less volatile road, and we would have made more money, or could have made more money."
Yeah,
in other cases, by the way.
And this is the thing, though. Like, it's retail traders, so unfortunately, whenever I think that's what it was. That was the class house suit. It was mostly retail traders that kind of put forth this action on Elon. I wonder if it was if Bill Ackman put a silver suit on Elon, like how that would have turned out, right? Billionaire versus billionaire.
I think it's a little different when you drag it out, or you can drag it out. But in this case, they couldn't.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's over.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Elon,
speaking of Elon,
he does own a social media platform called Twitter. We have a Twitter page called Drunkenomical.
Absolutely. It's Drunkenomical.
God, dude, you're so good at that, dude. You're better than me at that now. That's crazy.
And that is one separate. It is not connected in any way, shape, or form to the other social media we have in the metaverse or in the Discord. In the metaverse, so it's Facebook and Instagram. You can find us at the same Drunkenomical, Drunkenomical.
Same handle.
And then, of course,
you almost had it twice.
From all of those except for Twitter, you can find the invite to our Discord.
Free to all.
Where
all this is free to all. We got a lot of good content in there. Also, Canelo, man. If you're gonna do your MBA, I'm sorry, I haven't responded to your thing yet. I'm studying for the CFA, so it's like my life is just completely disorganized. But dude, congrats on the decision to go to the MBA, man. Like it's much more helpful if you have a specialization in something. Not that I'm talking as someone with like that much experience or wisdom or anything like that, because I had a specialization in an MBA. I don't think it particularly helped me very much, but I also didn't have very much work experience. So
yeah, so
I think with your engineering background, I think it's a fantastic decision. Like, I think it's super wise.
It puts you in a really solid position.
Yeah, but seriously, man, like, if there's anything, I don't know, not that I'm the best person to go to for advice, but if there's anything I could do, man, let me know. I'd be more than happy to help you. But yeah, dude, that's our Discord channel. It's free to all.
There are some big questions and stuff we'll get to over the course of the next few days.
Yeah. Also, John, I'll just mention this real quick, too. ChatGPT, very fascinating. Very, very fascinating.
It's an interesting one. I saw someone had
tried. I've used it. Like, it's, dude, it's, man, I don't know how they do. Like, I would ask some simple things, just obscure, funny things, and it'll come up with an essay, and I'll ask it, like, super complex questions about, like, most difficult subject, you know, whether it's, you know, my brother's physical therapy stuff or finance stuff. It comes up with a brilliant essay.
I asked it some accounting questions, and I've seen it ask some accounting questions, and it's really interesting because there are times where it is absolutely spot on brilliant, and then there's times where it's like, something's not quite right.
Yeah, so
it'll get something just backwards, and you're like, oh, that's great, except it's wrong.
Yeah, so it's pretty crazy. Like, I have actually used it a few times for certain work things and for certain study things, and it's actually helped. But got to be careful with that, right? You like it, you know, it's kind of like what we say, you know, if you hear something, you're like, I don't know about that. I don't know about the petrol gold momentum. I don't know about that. It's like, okay, well, go look it up, do some research, kind of figure it out for yourself. Yeah. It's kind of like the stuff you hear on ChatGPT. You can't just hear something
it's like the fact that India is paying for Russian natural gas with rupee, with dollars. And it's like, of course they are.
Exactly.
Why would they trade in US dollars the Russians then can't use?
Right. Exactly. Right. But anyways, you know, a lot going on this week. You know, like, I think last week was pretty fascinating. I mean, we tried to hold off recording last week after the Fed meeting, which we did, right? I mean,
we were successful in that regard. But in some other regards, we weren't necessarily on our game.
Well, it's story of my life. But
I blame Bacardi, but
I'll blame the turkey.
But no, I need some more ice. Let's put it this way. After the news we got, after the CPI, after the jobs report we got, it's very clear that the Fed did not have that information, and that if they did, knew what the jobs report was going to be, then the 25 basis points was woefully underdone.
Yeah, putting it politely, that was insanely irresponsible, like what they did.
Yeah.
If they knew, which, like, I feel like to an extent you kind of have to know, right? Like, because I feel like as, you know, you see the weekly job reports, you can kind of make up your mind, you know, like you kind of have to know or have a sense of, have a decent forecast, at least, you know, if you actually pay attention to it. Like, I wasn't paying attention to the weekly jobs claims in January, but like the Fed does. So if you see those weekly jobs claims trickle in, it's like, come on.
Maybe they thought there's going to be a jobless balance out of the, or a loss balance out of like seasonal workers or like a rotation. But it clearly didn't materialize in a meaningful way because they were off by what, 330,000 jobs? I think that's what it was. I think I did the math.
Yeah. I was like, wow, it's almost 400,000 jobs they're off by, right? Which is a drastic amount.
Oh yeah, and you have unemployment dropped to what, 3.4?
Yeah, fell to 3.4. And the estimate was 3.6.
Yeah, It's the lowest unemployment in 53 years now. Remember, we've historically talked about the problem with just using unemployment. You have to look at other things. You have to look at workforce participation. You have to look at what the quality of the employment is for the people.
Wage growth, all those other things. Oh, yeah. And then, all that stuff too.
People coming in, people dropping out of that workforce number.
Yeah.
But still, 330,000, that's about the number of people that Russia's gathering together to reinvade Ukraine. So
I should not be laughing at that, but
that's... No, we shouldn't be. But I can understand where Russia might be able to make the claim that they have the unemployment is down by 200,000. We have 200,000 new jobs. And I'm like, yeah, are they government jobs?
Yeah, so that's
are they government jobs, Vlad?
Well, that's the thing. That makes me wonder, because did you see whether or not it was public or private jobs that mainly contributed to?
I think it was across the board, but it looked like it was private, and it looked like it was private small and mid cap. So it wasn't the techs.
Right. So a question for you, and I know this is coming from complete far out left field tinfoil hat stuff.
Uh-oh.
So the 517,000 jobs or whatever that increased in January, this is just from my own knowledge, because I don't know. So if a bunch of people leave Microsoft and they go work at and apply for a job at a small business, and they get the job, mm-hmm. does that count as a job added?
Well, that's the thing. So for unemployment purposes,
because it's not like it's still like the same. Like it's the same person that has a different job now. But does that count as a job added?
It entirely depends. So from the unemployment report perspective, it depends. What I'll say is this: it depends on how long they were in between jobs.
Okay, so if they filed for unemployment. And then got the job, then it counts as a job added.
It will. Right? Yeah. It'll count as a job added because the job was was destroyed and then the job was added. But if they transfer straight from A to B, right? So on Friday I get my walking papers from Oracle or whatever. And then Monday and over the weekend I talk to Kevin. I don't know. And Kevin's like, hey, you can come work at my vegetable stand on the side of the highway. And I'm like, I'll take it.
Yeah.
If it's that fast, it probably doesn't count. It'll show up on payroll report
next
week because it's a new job by
jobs
him.
Added. Yeah.
But you'll also see on the payroll reports jobs destroyed, right? So jobs ended. Mm-hmm. And in that case, you'll end up with some of those that just kind of...
Yeah. At least the nice thing is it keeps the unemployment rate stable. Whereas this one actually, I mean, it's down versus the estimate. But okay, that's crazy, because I do think, if you really think about it, there were a lot of layoffs in November and December, right?
Oh, yeah.
And people get their 2 weeks and then they file for unemployment
I
wonder if a lot of that comes from that, right? If people in November and December that got laid off all got jobs in January because it's new year, new me.
Yeah, or if they sat on their severance for a while and were just like, I got 6 weeks of severance pay. I'm going to ride this out.
Yeah, no, very likely. But I feel like, maybe a lot of people are like, hey, new year, new me. I'm going to focus on, because, a lot of resolutionists, I feel like those people, if they did get laid off in October, November, December, turn of the year could motivate them. I don't know. I'm just pure speculation, right? So,
some of that runs out and you're just like, all right, time to go figure something out.
Yeah. So I think
I'm bored of being at home.
Yeah. So February, I think that jobs report that comes out in March, that's got to be pretty fascinating.
Could be a little anemic.
It's
either going to be anemic or it's really going to blow things away.
Exactly. But
that's,
I still think.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll be a normal one.
Well, either way, what I still think is the Fed, 25 basis points, still no balls. Still. I still think that.
They showed up they showed up to the baseball game with a wiffle bat.
And no ball, right? and no ball.
Yeah, they didn't bring the wiffle ball. I got bad news when that baseball gets thrown.
They're just throwing air. So every time they swing, they miss the ball and it's a strike.
Yeah, they're all fur coat and no trousers. They're just not. It's a poor way to play.
Yeah, so that's my thing. And I think, one of the big things to keep an eye on, right, is CPI. CPI comes out on Valentine's Day. So, I hate to ruin Valentine's Day for you ahead of time, but inflation numbers come out then. Basket of goods, I still think it's questionable. We talked about that last week.
The real problem is you'll probably have noticed that already, because if you're going to go out to dinner, you're going to do all those nice things for your partner, then you'll notice how much more you're paying for that Hallmark card.
Oh, yeah.
Well, $6. What?
Dude, and it's crazy.
But I think there have been some other crazy things. A simple news thing I kind of want to point out is, if you're paying attention to India, go ahead and take a peek at the Adani scandal. We don't really want to touch on it until there's been
much more clarity on it. Yeah.
Interesting accusations, but is it possible that there is another Nikola-style fraud occurring.
Yeah, but this would be like, yes, because like Nicola, the government wasn't in on it.
There was no government involvement. Yeah. This is the kind of like, if the Adani scandal, if Adani turns out to be as bad as Heisenberg Research, that's Breaking Bad. I know. Heisenberg Research, no, that's crystal meth. If Hindenburg Research is correct kind of in their accusations of accounting fraud, of stock manipulation, securities manipulation, and other things, and the government is as involved as it seems, let's put it this way, as the equity stakes seem to suggest that it is, I've never seen a fraud topple a government before, but maybe we'll get to see.
That would be really crazy because I don't know how much money they manage and you know how much is at stake here. If they go under, like, do they have enough? Because I feel like there are companies in the U.S. If certain companies in the U.S. go under, it's going to take down the U.S. government. And a lot of it is just because they hold debt. Like, the U.S. government holds debt securities in a lot of American companies. So if those companies all of a sudden became insolvent, the debt was worth zero.
Yeah, there'd be issues.
You know, I'm not saying, I mean, I don't think the government is that exposed to that kind of risk because they would never do that.
No, but that's what I mean. Like, because they would take it in emergency circumstances with certain other collateralizations.
Yeah, exactly. And they're on hold. Yeah, and their aim is to roll it off, right? Which is pretty ironic because they bought a bunch of debt from, you know, corporate debt, like investment grade corporate. And that's the other thing too. It has to be investment grade. So
yeah,
they bought a lot of investment grade corporate debt. And then they raise interest rates.
I never said they were smart. I said they were the government.
There's not a bigger example of shooting yourself in the foot than buying a ton of debt and then raising interest rates.
Look,
there's nothing like...
Who knows? In 2008, I thought some of what they were doing was some of the most irresponsible government behavior in the history of government behavior. And
yeah.
that turned out, 2008, some of their investments turned... Let me rephrase that. Their investments turned out to be some of the most profitable things the government's ever done.
They lowered rates after 2008.
That's true.
See what I mean? So like, as I was saying, like you buy debt, you lower rates, the debt that you're currently holding becomes much more valuable versus 2020, you buy a bunch of debt, you hike rates faster than you've ever hiked rates ever in the history of the Federal Reserve. Which I'm just like, okay.
Yeah.
Can you think of a better example of shooting yourself in the foot?
Yeah, or, there was this time, a guy shot himself in the actual, like actually shot himself in the foot. You're not wrong.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, so the whole Adani case, apparently, do they hold equities?
Yeah, they do. So apparently, they hold. So between the State Bank of India, so the SBI, did admit that apparently approximately 1% of their outstanding loans is the stake that's backed by all of their holdings in Adani.
Yeah.
So 1% of the holdings of the bank is Adani. And it's like, well, it's not.
And it's equity, is 1% it's equity shares, right? It's not 1%.
It's not
1%. Well, all the 1% is in our fixed income sleeve. It's not that, right?
It's 1% of our outstanding loans is equity in Adani. And so then you've then you have the next one is like the LIC Life Insurance Company of India, so a major insurance company has apparently substantial holdings in Adani and its subsidiaries. So it's only one of those things you look at and you're like, oh, that's not a good look. Government.
Yeah.
But we've always said we've said quite often that we don't think governments should hold equity in firms because the government should not pick winners and losers. It should be there to enforce the rules and essentially kind of stay out.
We've been vocal about this too. Like we don't like congressmen and congresswomen and senators.
Absolutely not.
We don't like them trading options.
Yeah, I don't want them to have securities or equities either.
Yeah, I also hate them trading stocks too. So
at what point is it not one government and it's 535 or 536 specific people deciding, well, we can steer the government.
Right, exactly. So yeah, if all of a sudden someone buys a bunch of call options and a semiconductor stock and then the CHIPS Act passes, it's like, okay, well, you want to tell me that's not insider trading? But anyways, a little off tangent there, right? Like I think it's an interesting story. You know, let's see how it plays out.
It is. We'll see how it develops.
But that
wasn't really our main topic. Our main topic was what happens, or our main idea or interesting bit was kind of what happens when things go the other way instead of talking about the appreciating value of the US dollar, which we know we've done. Why don't we talk about what happens when you go the other way, when you depreciate your currency?
Yeah. How does a country depreciate their currency other than just printing a ton of their own currency and or
yeah.
dropping rates to zero or even going negative.
So that's the first one. Is the easiest way to devalue your currency is just to print a bunch of it,
yeah. Right?
So obvious rules of supply and demand, laws of supply and demand is there's more of it, so it's worth less.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward there. Yeah.
So that's the main one. That's like generally the first call. There are some others, and it's generally speaking, if a central bank decides it's going to set a base relationship between currencies, because banks can do that.
Yeah.
A central bank can just change what it's deciding it's willing to convert at mm-hmm. for people. So essentially,
That is just mind-boggling, because I feel like that's, you know, like, do you have to unanimous? Is it like a stock split? Like, do they just do like a quote-unquote stock split with their own currency?
It's more because they're the central bank. They can just dictate.
Oh.
Because they, wow. Right. So one of the very basic tenets of modern monetary theory is that the central bank is in complete control of all the currency of that country.
If Lebanon decides they want to go to their biggest trading partner, who I don't know who it is, I don't care to look it up, but like, let's say their biggest trading partner is Europe. They can just go to Europe and say, you know how our exchange rate was 15, whatever currencies that they have, 15 of my currency to 1 euro. Well, you know, what if I'm willing to give you 15,000 of my own currency for 1 euro? Like, would you accept that deal? And of course, Europe, you know, they'd
probably
be like,
say yes.
Be like, yeah, are you kidding me?
Yeah. So, well, generally the central bank is able to control what happens within its own borders. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, that is a relationship they can have is with their counterparties, other central banks.
But they don't have to do that with every single one too. Otherwise, there's plenty of arbitrage. There's a lot of arbitrage opportunities there.
So instead, what the central bank of Lebanon would generally do is it would turn to its own people within Lebanon and go, hey, for anyone who wants to buy a euro, this is how many, I think it's Lebanese pounds. This is how many pounds you have to give us.
That's weird.
You can have a free float, which is generally a bank going, what happens. We're going to let the market be the market. You can have a static one that's decided where they essentially say, if you want to buy our currency to anyone coming into the country or anyone trying to do business in their country is you have to do business with us. Because again, they control the currency. So they can do that.
Well, it's kind of like the
it's also central bank.
It's kind of like the same concept as like the petrodollar, right? Kind of, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It's very similar.
Yeah.
And then obviously the way around this is black market is to say, you can also do it with interest rates, as you said. You can raise interest rates, you can lower interest rates, and that affects demand for your currency. That affects essentially the way in which people would...
How much it costs for your currency.
Yeah, right? It costs essentially to do things with your currency. And so you'd be able to purchase certain things at different interest rates.
Well, it's also like, okay, so if you're a foreign investor, it's like, well, can I convert my currency to your currency by your risk-free rate? Like, what's the yield? Like, is it worth it for me to do that?
Yeah.
If I think, you know, the Forex rate.
Is it worth it for me to show up to your bank, your central bank again, or your treasury, and at the same time be like, hey, I want to buy your debt for my.
Right. Exactly.
I'll give you my currency. You give me your debt.
Yeah. And obviously, like, you know, whenever that matures, it matures in the foreign country's currency. And it's like, okay, well, what's the exchange rate going to be at that time? Right. And can you, you know, can you potentially sell a forward swap or something like that on that currency? You know, so there's plenty of arbitrage opportunities there. Not plenty, right? Obviously, the market, you know, whenever there are arbitrage.
It'll get priced in very quickly.
Yeah, dude, like arbitrage opportunities, if they exist, they don't last very long, you know, which I'm sure they're existing and disappearing every day millions of times.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, yeah, but like they don't last very long. But didn't mean to go on that arbitrage tangent.
Arbitrage
devalued
is arbitrage.
Dude,
it's a fun topic. It can be a fun topic if we were going to do a deep dive, but
I'd rather not. To me it's such a brain, dude. It's like, you know, it's like a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yeah, it's Inception.
Directed by David Fincher. Like directed by David Fincher, written by Stanley Kubrick. Like that's what it's like. That's what arbitrage is like.
Yeah, and
written by Stanley Kubrick,
produced by Quentin Tarantino. It's really messed with it.
It's just So it's not chronological. It's just a complete plot twist. Yeah, dude, it's arbitrage is a crazy topic. But yeah, so why would they do that? Why would Lebanon just back to
why would they devalue? So the issue is that they had pegged to the U.S. dollar at a rate of I think it was something like 1,500
1,507 to $1.
Yeah, 1,507. To one. So 1,507 pounds would get you a dollar. And they've decided they probably looked in, they looked at what they export, they looked at what they import, they looked at everything across the board and they said, that's really not sustainable.
We're not being nice enough to the US. So let's devalue our currency.
It may also have been a kind of a point where it's like, you know, this just isn't going to work. So at this point, they go, okay, we need to encourage probably what they're trying to do is they're trying to encourage foreign consumption of Lebanese goods. Which is to say right now they're looking at it, they're trying to make their goods cheaper to the rest of the world.
Especially to the U.S. Well, because if the U.S., let's be honest, the U.S. is the world's biggest customer. Mm-hmm. It also helps that we're the world's biggest economy, but
it doesn't hurt.
Yeah. So we're the world's biggest customer. They want the world's biggest customer to buy more of their stuff. And they say, hey, everything's on sale here, right?
Yeah.
It used to be $1,500 to $1. Ish, right?
I'm kind of using 15,000.
Yeah, now it's, multiply that by 10.
We're devaluing by 90%.
You guys have 10 times more buying power here.
Your money now goes this much further.
Yeah.
But like I said, they're trying to encourage foreign investment. They're trying to encourage foreign consumption. They're trying to encourage foreign, foreign involvement would be my real guess.
Yeah. I just don't think that's, that's a strategy. I'll say that much. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, it is something they have not done. They have not revalued their currency in 25 years.
But is the thing though. Like, this is why I like Forex. This is why I like foreign exchange markets, is because investors and traders and, a lot of companies that do business overseas, they're the ones that keep the currencies and, all the foreign exchanges, they keep them honest. Right. Mm-hmm. And obviously there's they take a little too much liberty on a certain currency or whatever it is. And that happens. I get it.
Here's a big reason that a lot of places devalue, or a lot of, I'll say, distressed nations or nations that are having some sort of financial or economic problems devalue their currency. And it's that generally they're talking to the IMF or the World Bank, and the IMF or the World Bank look at them and go, hey, your currency as it currently stands, it isn't going to work. It's too unstable, or it's too, you have it valued in such a way that, like, we don't want to make a loan and then just have we fully expect it to devalue at some point. Either the markets are going to devalue it or you're going to. We're not going to make you a loan right now before you do that. We're not going to loan you the money at an interest rate. We're not going to do 2008 for you. We're not going to loan you money and then have you lower your interest rates lower the interest rates to the point where it's like, hey, we're running it up. It's them essentially saying you need to devalue your currency.
I mean,
so that when we loan you this money,
that's like a whole other can of worms. Because you think about it, so what happens if you own Lebanese debt, right? And you're entitled to this much of the face value at maturity,
and then they devalue tomorrow, and they say, hey, we're gonna pay you back in our currency because we always were gonna.
You agreed to it. You agreed to it, right? You agreed to 1,000 Lebanese, whatever it is, right?
Pounds,
you
told, and then you know, and then I devalue the next day, and so I have taken.
God,
I'm sitting on. Let's just say it's $1 million loan. That's if you loaned me $1 million, and I said I'll give you
Lebanese
and I'll pay
pounds.
That million back with 10 million Lebanese pounds, and then you give me that, and I go sweet, and then I devalue my currency the next day, and I go, here's your 10 million pounds, and you go, this is
you
this
lost a lot of money there,
this is
yeah,
worthless. Yeah, I'm at $1 million. You've pocketed the difference, and now you're using my currency out in the world to buy goods that you're bringing into your country to do whatever you're going to do. And I think it's actually one of the main reasons is that Lebanon is looking for IMF money or a World Bank loan.
That's absurd.
And they've been told, hey, we think a devaluation is coming. You need to devalue now.
Because
if you don't devalue now, we think this loan is it becomes a bad loan.
So you
devalue. If you devalue, then we could go, look, you devalue before. I go, okay, this is now, the risk is now not here. Of the devaluation,
God, this
I'm willing to make the loan.
This makes it so manipulative because I feel like it's okay. So IMF say, hey, they say, hey, you devalue now, and Lebanon does. They devalue their currency. I feel like it's a lot like anything else, right? You devalue their currency, all of a sudden their currency becomes, if it's the same quantity, their currency just becomes much more valuable overnight.
Yeah,
now there's going to be a run on Lebanese currency. I mean, this to me, it just seems like a huge opportunity for the IMF. I don't know what the IMF position is. I don't know what their balance sheet looks like. I don't know what kind of Lebanese debt that they have. I don't know what kind of Lebanese derivatives that they have, but I feel like there was definitely something to gain for them. IMF was one pushing for this, if that's the case,
I don't know. They're looking for more stability. They're looking at saying like, hey,
it sounds like it's much more than that. It's just like, why would you cut the value of your own currency by?
I don't know if you've done it. I've studied the Lebanon a little bit.
Okay.
In my time at Nebraska and things, and it is a very interesting state that has some it's a very, very interesting kind of religious and government experiment where I think the president has to be Christian, the prime minister has to be Muslim, and then
wow.
It's a very weird, like, like their religion. It's a very weird, their religious tests associated with certain government jobs. It's very strange. Or at least really, if it isn't still that way, it was at one point. And so obviously they're between that and a few of the wars in the Middle East. The Lebanon hasn't exactly been treated the most kindly by its neighbors. And I mean, all of its neighbors, no one gets a free pass there. But in this case, what they're saying is you're unstable. You're not necessarily the vacation spot you used to be. You're not necessarily the industrial or agricultural powerhouse based on size that, like, you know, someone else would be. And so they're saying is we need to devalue your currency. Once your currency is devalued, we can loan you this money, and then you can rebuild or do what you're gonna.
I know, but that's
the projects you're trying
to
deal with.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. It's like, okay, you devalue your currency. All right, here's this giant loan to the IMF or whatever it is, right? So all of a sudden, you devalue the currency. IMF buys a ton of Lebanese debt that agrees to pay the IMF a ton of Lebanese pounds or whatever it is later on, just because they devalue their currency. And of course, right, their currency appreciates. Like, how is that not a win for the IMF? Because now they're getting paid back at a future date with a currency that just appreciated a ton of value just because it was devalued, because they were forced to be devalued, right? And I get that they devalued their currency because they wanted, you know, more. Like, obviously, like, I completely understand the fact that they devalued their currency because they wanted more countries to buy their goods.
Yeah,
100%.
Exactly.
That just makes sense.
The other problem is, and it's the fun thing that we talk about whenever you talk about any economy, there's always a black market. And it happens that in like places like the United States, the black market generally involves things like drugs. whereas in a lot of other countries, black markets actually, generally speaking, just involve currency. And it's where people are trying to move currency, move to a more stable currency, right? So I've been to a few countries in my time where there are two prices. There's the price in the local currency, and then there's the price in dollars or euros. And boy, is it a much better price when it's in dollars or euros. Because on the one hand, you might feel like they're gouging you because they're charging you what would essentially be a Western price. They're charging you, you're a foreign tourist. You're going to pay more money. But at the same time, you can haggle with them a little bit harder when you're doing that because you get the best price and then you go, okay, do you want it in dollars? Or do you want it in rubles or pesos, Colombian pesos? And they'll often say dollars. And the reason they want dollars is because if there's a bank devaluation tomorrow, they're in great shape, not in bad shape. And then also the stability. There's that stability, the US dollar. Now, the reason that 1,507 to 1 needed to be devalued to 15,000 is because in some parts of the Lebanon, the black market is trading at $1 gets you 57,000 Lebanese pounds.
Wow.
So there are people out there saying, I will pay this exorbitant amount of money to get a dollar. Like, I will buy your dollar. Here is money. Versus if you go to the government, you go, I have a dollar. And they go, well, here's 1,507. And there's a guy down the street going,
there's 15,000.
I'll give you 15,000. If you just treat it as like, I'm buying another currency, you're going to find whoever's offering you the most money. And then
that
what
is
happens
absurd.
Is suddenly,
I can't believe that that's actually happening. Well, I knew that the black market was much more popular with countries like that. That want the U.S. dollar.
Let's put it this way: if you and I were rocking up into Lebanon tomorrow to go
sell
and
dollars?
Have a great beach vacation,
yeah.
to go have a great beach vacation because it is a beautiful country. It has some beautiful beautiful Mediterranean.
Oh my God! It's gorgeous.
But say we were going and it was like, well, there's this guy in the official stand and he's offering us 15,000 pounds for per dollar, and then we see this sketchy guy in a coat. Who's like, I'll give you 35,000 per dollar. I imagine that as long as we didn't follow him down an alley, we'd probably do some business with that guy.
Or into one of those Lebanese caves. Yeah.
Absolutely. But if he was sitting there and he's like, hey, I've got a duffel bag, and he opened it and everything seemed legit, we'd probably do a little bit of business with that guy.
Yeah, here's $10. Give me
here's $10. What can you give me? All right, sweet. Let's go to the beach and get loaded.
Absolutely.
That's what they've done.
In Lebanon.
I've got 50,000 Lebanese pounds. Better. Who cares?
They better.
It's going to be fine. But so that's what's happened is you've got a central bank that you have a government that needs to acquire foreign aid or foreign currency to stabilize and then to help right the economy or fix some problems. And then in order to do that, they have to become competitive and start to undercut the black markets in their areas. Essentially say like, well, we need to become, if not as attractive as the black market, we need to become a lot more attractive than we currently are.
Yeah.
And that's what that is.
I guess that's really the big point of devaluing your currency is, I think the obvious big number one reason why you would devalue your currency is just because it just makes every other country in the world much more willing to buy your stuff. Because it's like, okay, like you're giving me more buying power. So obviously I'm more willing to buy
your absolutely.
Stuff. So of course, like if I can buy, I'm buying your stuff 10 cents on the dollar, which is a deal for me. And of course, the other thing too is, well, now, like, you know, as soon as you devalue your currency, it's like, okay, well, there's going to be a giant demand for your economic goods and your currency. So as soon as that happens, I mean, I feel like it's like a 6-month runway where you can lend money, probably at a pretty good rate too. So now you can get all this foreign direct investment because it's, you know, you devalue your currency. There's got to be a pretty big runway where a bunch of people just buy your debt and then your currency only appreciates.
So essentially, yeah, exactly right. Is you generally see a bump after a play like that because someone can buy in a lot less expensively and they can like, well, okay.
It's just like a stock split.
It frees up liquidity. It allows lower capped players to jump in the game.
Yeah.
Right. It's essentially the equivalent of putting penny slots in a casino, right? Like you're opening the game up to a whole new crowd of people that can play a certain amount of gaming.
Yeah. So I just wonder, like, to me, the only thing is, what happens with the risk-free rate? You know, like, do they change the interest rates with this?
They might not. In this case, they probably will not.
I feel like that's just like a big complexity in whatever math equation. Yeah.
It would be, and so that's why they're going to go like, well, let's keep it as simple as possible. We'll change one thing. We'll change the exchange rate, and then we'll change interest rates as we need to in the future, and we'll see what happens. One of the big problems that you generally see with a devaluation like this is it does tend to kickstart inflation. And I'll be honest, right now, during a relatively high inflation environment globally, it may not be the best thing.
And I feel like I've mentioned this on our podcast, but I'm not too optimistic on the dollar this year. That's just me.
No, probably not.
Yeah.
But it needs to come down eventually anyway. Or rather, if it doesn't need to come down, other things need to come up. Right.
Yeah,
so it's not a zero sum game.
Which at the end of the day, I think the dollar index comes down either way, however you want to look at it. And we talked about this in December, I think, or at least if not earlier this year, you know, I talked about how I'm not optimistic on the dollar. And, you know, the dollar index has decreased a little bit. I don't know what it's at now. I think it's at like 103 or something like that. And I think when we started the year, it was like 108. So maybe that's my thesis coming true. Maybe it's just pure luck.
Well, it's just the beginning of the year. Using Lebanon as our example, they're not going to do anything to manipulate their currency because they can't. They're not necessarily in a position to. Europe isn't in a position to necessarily manipulate. The UK certainly isn't in a position to manipulate their currency to affect the US dollar. There's only one real player. I mean, if India's really it is as in bed with the Adani and it's as fraudulent as certain suggestions have posited, then you know, India's not, you know, the petro rupee isn't a threat. If Russia keeps being
I need to back up real quick because I am way off. Okay, so the dollar index is not down year to date because in the last like 3 days.
Yeah, I was gonna say
in the last three days.
What
the heck happened? So the month of February, what happened in the month of February that made the dollar index shoot up? I don't know. It's up 2% in the month of February. So
only one down. Like, it's not like there's a whole lot of the years gone by.
Yeah, I don't know what news article came out that made that happen. Maybe, you know what? It had to be the jobs report.
That wouldn't shock me. I mean, let's put this way. You see 330,000 new jobs, and all that tells me is that's 330,000 people that historically weren't earning money that now are earning money.
Dude.
And if I'm a Lebanese exporter of any kind, I'm going, hey, that's 330,000 new customers that want my... Yeah. Tabbouleh salad recipe, whatever it is that they're selling, my Lebanese, my Lebanese widgets.
Dude.
You know, they're looking at that. That's a great day.
Well, I think, I think honestly, like we talked about good news is bad news. Mm-hmm. I think the 25 basis point rate hike wasn't good news, especially after the jobs report. But the jobs report,
it's so weird.
Because the jobs report is obviously great news. That's good news. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's good news.
Economically, that's...
Yeah, but good news is bad news. So the bad news is, because of the good news, the Fed is going to be more willing to tighten, and that's why the dollar index went up.
It's going to have to... It's not even just be more willing. I think it's just that... And I think I even said it last week, is that the Fed has got to be looking at this right now going, we have to tame inflation and we have to tame it soon. You know, it's that light at the end of the tunnel might be a train.
Mm-hmm.
And If it's a train, we need to, you know, we need to move off the tracks to the side, hug the tunnel wall, and be in a position where we can suck in our stomachs, you know, and turn our head enough that, you know, stand on our tippy toes long enough that we don't lose anything. Or if we do get, I mean, if you get hit by a train in a tunnel, you're got a problem. You're not going to, it sucks, a little bit, but
like that's your last bad day. Yeah.
Yeah. It's at least it was over quick, but still, it's the Fed is now going, well, we thought this, and if, you know, Powell's going to stand up there and say, it's wage inflation or wage growth is driving this inflation. It's like, well, you got 330,000 new problems.
Yeah, no. I can't stress this enough. I really think Jerome Powell is doing a good job with the cards he's dealt. You know, you're dealt a bad hand. Like, the only way you can win the game is if you bet well, right? So... Or if you read the other player well, right? So that's the only way you can win the game. And he's dealt, let's be honest, the worst hand any central banker has ever been dealt, you know,
in U.S. history. That jobs report for him really is like to keep your poker term in place. It's a bad beat.
Yeah.
I was playing in a game and I had a full house, aces, queens. Oof. It was aces full of queens. And
that's a really good hand.
Uh-huh.
That's a tough hand to beat.
Yeah. Yeah. And I lost that game.
No way.
Yep. I lost that game.
You couldn't lose it full of aces, that's for sure. So you lost it full of kings.
Nope. I lost it to four fours.
You poor thing. I don't know what to tell you.
And it was that final card was a four.
And you're like
pocket fours, and there were fours on the table, and there was one four on the table and nothing else.
What did you have in your hand? Did you have an ace and a queen? And there's an ace and two queens out on the.
I think I had pocket queens, and it was queen and two aces on the table. And so I was like, there's no way.
Queen, two aces, a four, and then.
Yeah, boom. I'm like, okay, there's two aces out there. He has two aces. I have two aces. That's fine. But I'm also there's a queen in the turn. Queen on the flop, and then I was sitting on pocket queens, and I was like, there's no way. There's no way this.
Dang.
You know what I mean? Like. I've now had a full house and like, dang. And it's not a low one. It's solid. And
that's
then
that's a really good full four house. Fours. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a bad beat. And it's like, shouldn't have happened.
Four of a kind. Yeah.
But that's the jobs report. The jobs report to Jay Powell is a bad beat. I think he was sitting there. I think he was sitting on
aces full of queens.
He was sitting on aces full of queens going, look, this is my bet. It's a solid bet. And if the jobs report had come in that 187 range, in that sub 200,000 range, even if it had been slightly good,
even if you're like
200,000, you know, a little over expectation, it's like, well, you know, it's slowing.
And let's be honest, like even if you're like, I don't know the odds of poker, but like even if you're okay, so you're sitting there with pocket queens and you see a queen and two aces on the floor, right, or whatever you call it, I don't know, and I'm not like a big poker snob.
Yeah,
you see a queen and two aces, and then all of a sudden. You know, all you see is a four and another four. You're like, what are the odds someone else is sitting there with pocket fours?
Well,
it's not very
high. The only other guy sitting at the table by the time we got to that last card, the only card I'm seeing is I see two fours on the table. I'm like, okay, so this guy's. Yeah. I was like, I'm sitting here thinking, like, does he have a pocket ace?
Yeah. So
is
he holding trip aces? That's the thing.
That's literally the only
other way you could lose is if someone else has two pocket aces, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or I guess so, if he had one queen, but it was one queen, one ace.
Yeah. So that would be really tough too. But like, there aren't very many hands that could beat your hand if you're sitting there with aces full of queens. And you're looking at
exactly. So like, but he had it, and that's like Jay Powell sitting there at the FOMC poker game.
Comes back,
and
to
he's
that,
like,
yeah.
"Look, 200,000, we can do 25 basis points is going to be fine. It'll show the markets that we fully intend that we are slowing, that we're not at pivot yet, but that we're slowing the rate hikes because we see A, B, C, and D. The markets will respond accordingly. They'll probably go up because they'll see that." We've got a light at the end of the tunnel. They'll assume that we're seeing something in inflation that's good.
They shot up on Wednesday, and then you look on Friday. They shot up initially, and they're like, "Okay, wait, that was stupid of us."
Wait.
Markets shut up.
Yeah.
And they're like, "Nope, let's calm down here for a second."
Yeah, it's bring us back to. And I know they were down today, and then they ended. Yep. I want to say up, but it was that U, a really weird U.
No, yeah, I mean, but, the markets were down today, but I think it was relatively flat.
The other point is like that is the whole bad beat option with the 25 basis points, which again, like, my concern, I've said it multiple times, is why are you so worried? You know, You haven't seen any evidence to bring it down to 25. Just stay at 50. 50, if we need more medicine, we need more medicine.
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's a hell of a lot easier to cut the amount of medicine later than to increase it.
I mean, whatever.
Increase the dose later.
Not a big deal. Like, honestly, like, okay, so they missed their target rate by year end, right?
Yeah.
You know, not a big deal if you really think about it, because they made up for it the very next meeting.
Because you say, oh, invasion of Russia or invasion of Ukraine. You know, war in Eastern Europe.
All that stuff. And then, you know, and then job supports towards the end of the year started to look a little bit promising, but a lot of other things started to not look promising. How the Fed was looking at that, I don't know, but
yeah, I get it. But I'll say this, they've now got to be concluding that they had a really bad read. They got a bad beat. And now they're going to have to do something, because that 330,000 new jobs or jobs exceeding expectations. It's definitely unemployment is still trending down. The economy is not cooling.
Yeah. So
it is overheating.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, if I was the Fed chair, which I'm not, and I will never be, but if I was the Fed chair, I would say, look, okay, let's do one more rate hike and let's keep it there for a little bit. Right. Because I think if you keep it there for a little bit, it'll encourage inflation to come down. And then maybe at some point it'll become, you know, a net positive real interest rate. And then we can start, you know, once it becomes too net positive, it's like, okay, now let's start lowering rates. Right.
I mean, that's because we're looking at inflation. We're saying inflation is 6.5.
I mean, we'll see on Valentine's Day, but last one was 6.5.
Yeah. It was 6.5. We're at a high rate of 4.5. They're apart by 2%.
Yeah.
I think after the next meeting, we'll be at a high rate of 5. So I think they'll have to go back to 50. And then you'll hopefully see inflation maybe trend down.
Keep it this way for a while. Like, if we have to have a net positive, I mean, this to me just came to my head. Okay. So if we had to have a net positive real interest rate for more than a year, cool.
Yeah.
Why do I say this? Because we had a net negative real interest rate for more than a year. If we have a net positive for more than a year, no big deal. Let's let that ride, and, you know, let them cook. Let them cook is all I'm saying.
It'll make certain investments more worthwhile. People will stop spending money. It's that very interesting kind of, and I know we had a question asked in the Discord, and that was definitely by Bob Irwin. Hey, Bob.
Hi, Bob.
I'm knocking spiced rum in the same way. I drink it. I'm not like, and it's also not spiced rum now. It's historically spiced rum was, isn't very good quality. We'll spice it to sell it. Having said that,
so you're knocking 30-year bonds from back in 1990, but you're not knocking 30-year bonds now. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. It's different.
It's a different market. It's a totally different bond. It's a totally different government
100%,
now. 100%. Yeah. I also happen to recall some of the rum you drink, Bob, and that was very good rum. it's not like that. It's not the cheap and expensive spiced rum, which, Having said that, but Bob, you make a fair point, is that the number of 401k people putting money into their 401ks, and using it to buy into ETFs, into certain stocks and certain securities, those rates have not gone down, or that they do, they haven't gone down by much, and that people aren't moving from stocks into other things. And you kind of, I think in the question you ask kind of why people are doing that. And from what I've read, it seems like a lot of what the reason people are doing that is that they're looking, I think people have looked at kind of the downside that they've experienced in the last year or so in the stock market versus the wild upside from 2020 to 2021. And my guess is you have people who are buying into the stock markets now, or buying into certain stocks and ETFing into certain stocks, because it's this very simple thing of, we've been there once, we will go back there, right? So what was it Luke said in one of our conversations, that historical ceilings become future floors, essentially.
Yeah.
Ceiling becomes a resistance point.
I mean, Luke Lloyd is a big technical analysis guy. And I think the number one rule for technical analysis, like the very first thing, if you ever learn anything about technical analysis, is former resistance points become...
Former ceilings become future floors.
Yeah, exactly.
But resistance points become...
Yeah, become support. Support levels. That's what it is.
A resistance point becomes a support level. So a ceiling becomes a floor.
Yeah. So, like, if you break through resistance, all of a sudden, it trades above resistance for a long time. It goes back down to that resistance level. It'll always bounce. Not always.
See Bitcoin. Yeah. But
see Zoom stock, right? Yeah. But
ooh. Yeah. But So you're seeing. I think you're gonna see a lot of people who are keeping their money in certain places, or who they either don't understand what they can do. They don't understand. I'm reluctant to say like the dumb money, but yeah, I mean, if the shoe fits.
No, listen, I think you're 100% right. And I think a lot of people are just, they saw what happened in 2021 and they're just like, or not 2022, but it was like, okay, wow, the market's cratered. So I want to time the bottom of this. Everybody is saying it's going to be a long, shallow recession. Yeah. You know?
And also they see like, I remember what prices were on these. If I can get back to that price or higher, I will make so much more money. But these people who have seen like a stock trade at a certain price and they're going, it'll trade there again.
Right. Yeah.
I just have to wait.
Yeah. So, you know.
And the thing is, they're right. The problem is, are they going to have good value for money as they do it?
Yeah. That's a really big question, you know. And I think, you know, speaking of good value for your money, there is a cool thing. If you wanted to exchange your money for this thing, I think it's a really good value exchange for money. It's called a Drunkonomics hoodie, which can be found at
drunkonomics.myspreadshop.com.
That's what it is. Drunkonomics.myspreadshop.com.
It is a sweet place. Don't feel constrained by the hoodie. You can also get hoodless sweaters, hoodless shirts, collared shirts.
Tank
I'm not
tops.
Saying you have to, but you
well,
can.
Collared is for like when you're trying to make birdies. You know, I like hoodies because, you know, in the winter it keeps you warm. In the summer, if you're trying to sweat a lot and you're going to the boxing gym or whatever, like you're trying to cut weight, which I, you know, I'm in that phase of my life right now for some reason. I picked up a new hobby in boxing. You know, I go boxing in my Drunkonomics hoodie.
Weight.
And a lot of times, you know, when you sweat a lot in hoodies, you gotta get more than one. So,
absolutely.
You know,
you gotta have a going out hoodie and a boxing hoodie.
Yeah, exactly. So I found my extra hoodies at drunkonomics.myspreadshop.com.
Yeah, no, and it's here's I don't necessarily like the crazy thing, but I've been sleeping in my hoodie the last few days. It's been a little chilly, but it's really comfortable, really soft.
Yeah,
I think,
dude,
I look good.
No, well, dude, you look fantastic all the time.
But you wake up in the morning and it's like, oh, I took the dogs out. Well, I got the hoodie on, so.
Well, I'm just saying, you personally, James, you look good all the time. But like, whenever you wear that Drunkonomics hoodie, you just look.
I just look that much better.
You go from a 10 to an 11.
Ooh.
You know.
Yeah. I was gonna say my cholesterol's high enough. You don't have to butter me up quite so much, but.
Sorry, man, I can't help it. But if you want to butter James up even more with me, you can always butter him up at patreon.com. That's patreon.com/drunkonomics. Leave a tip in the tip jar. Help me buy butter for James.
I'll be honest, you know, and I will say this, we are not going to use a penny of it for butter. We're going to use it on ice molds, fruit, and liquor.
Well, I mean,
and maybe beer.
Is there a drink? No, definitely beer. But is there a drink that includes butter? Or no?
I hope not.
I hope not.
There's got to be somewhere.
Yeah, Marlon Brando ruined butter for me.
I love butter, but I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, dude, no. Oh, yeah, I use butter all the time when I cook my eggs that are now $9 a dozen. But yeah, it's, yeah, no. Anyways, so leave a tip in the tip jar. Help us buy eggs, even though we're, you know, the eggs we use are going to be egg whites for our whiskey sours.
For our whiskey sours. And those are getting expensive. So
yeah, but like I said, you know, like as things get expensive, my encouragement to you is to continue to play chestnut checkers, always fill and kill, because that makes everything just much better. Don't brag, just say. And last but not least,
no matter what happens this week, no matter what happens with this the Super Bowl, stay drunkonomical, guys.
Absolutely, stay drunkonomical, my friends.
No.
Cheers.